Peace talks in Yemen have broken down in Kuwait somewhat. The former regime's delegation has withdrawn from the direct peace talks. The Ansarullah movement has blamed the suspension of the talks on the lack of seriousness and the inability to take decisions on the part of the other side. In this edition of the debate, we'll discuss whether the former regime is serious about the talks, or is it using the same tactics that its supporter Saudi Arabia is using in Syria.
Yemen's former government says it has indefinitely suspended direct peace talks with Ansarullah movement. The UN envoy for Yemen, Ismail Ould Sheikh Ahmed, announced the decision made by representatives of the former government backed by Saudi Arabia. He said they halted direct negotiations in Kuwait after what the ex-government delegation described as Ansarullah's takeover of a military facility in Amran province, north of the capital Sana'a. Ahmed said the Saudi-backed delegation is still in Kuwait for indirect negotiations. The deposed government says it is not possible to continue the talks amid what it calls violations of the ceasefire it blames on Ansarullah fighters. But others dispute those claims. Yemen's official news agency has recorded some 4,000 breaches of the truce by Saudi Arabia and its allied forces since the ceasefire took effect on April the 10th. It said the violations include shelling by the forces loyal to the government of former President Abd Rabu Mansur Hadi and bombing raids by Saudi fighter jets.
There's been no ceasefire. There's been thousands of violations of the ceasefire. Saudi-backed Hadi government, all they're talking about is disarming the Houthis at this point with the peace talks. And it certainly isn't anything that's fair to the Houthis, and it's absolutely not something that they should agree to, because the Saudi-backed and American-backed Hadi presidency is absolutely a puppet presidency. Calling for a ceasefire and then continuing the attacks. There's been ongoing bombings. There've been ongoing attacks, thousands by the Hadi presidency and the Western-backed government.
Ansarullah also says Saudi Arabia and its allied forces must immediately end their aggression against Yemen. On Sunday, Ansarullah spokesman took a Twitter to say the former deposed government is fabricating excuses and wasting time. Foot dragging is a key word as Saudi Arabia appears to be pushing the ball into Ansarullah's court to cover up its failures. Saudi Arabia's military campaign has failed to produce the desired results. It has killed more than 9,400 Yemenis, triggering a humanitarian crisis. Riyadh is also under massive economic pressure. It has launched austerity measures to pay for the costly war that, in political terms, has led to no meaningful gains. Now Riyadh seems to be facing a one-way road to drag itself from the Yemen war through a political solution as a face-saving measure that is not backing off under pressure.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, Programs Director at the Shafaqna Institute of Middle East Studies, Catherine Shugdam, joins us from London. And we have Lawrence J. Korb, who's a U.S. foreign policy and national security analyst, join us from Washington. I'd like to welcome you both. And Lawrence Korb, let me start with you and get a reaction from you on the former regime's withdrawal from the direct peace talks in Kuwait.
I think it's rather unfortunate. It's somewhat like what's happening in Syria. We get a ceasefire, then people violate it. But my understanding is what happened is that the Houthis, a back group, took control of a military base north of the capital, and that was the incident that got them to do it. They also came after a security chief in Yemen. So there are a couple of incidents that gave them a rationale to drop out. And it'll be interesting to see what the other delegations say about those two incidents.
Catherine Shugdam, of course, this is, as our guest just indicated, they're very similar to what has happened in Syria in some respects. But why do you think the similarity of which is very striking is when there's some gains of major significance being made, in this case in Yemen, with the Ansarullah movements, and in the case of Syria with the government forces, then you have the other sides of each country in the talks, then either stall or withdraw themselves from the talks.
No, absolutely. You make a very, very good point here. I mean, you have to understand that the Houthi are actually winning. They are pushing. You might call them, Hadi militia or pro-Hadi militias, but what they really are radical militants. operating in Yemen. And the very reason why the Amran military base was taken back by the Houthi movement, the resistance movement, I prefer to call them, it is because they do not want al-Qaeda elements to find a way into northern Yemen. So there was no real breach of any ceasefire. It was just self-defense. Now, when it comes to breaching the so-called ceasefire, I mean, the Saudi have done thousands of breaches, and no one seems to be paying attention. The only reason why the Hadi so-called government decided to withdraw is because they're realizing that not only are they losing ground politically, but they are losing ground militarily. And if the Saudi were looking for I would say, an honorable escape and a way out of Yemen, they can't find a way, because why would the Houthi agree to lay down their weapons when they are, first of all, being attacked still on their land, and they are protecting the people of Yemen, and they are supported by the people of Yemen? Why would they do that when they're winning? Why would they negotiate with the Hadi government, which is not a legitimate government anyway? Why would they do that in the first place? They don't need to, because they are pushing those militants, those radical militants, who have invading their country, back out. So why would they need to negotiate anything with anybody? You have to understand that the only reason why the Houthi have agreed in the first place to sit down at the negotiating table is because, like President Bashar al-Assad's done, they wanted to open up a diplomatic way to hopefully change the mind of the international community and show good faith and prove to the world that what they are about is about democracy and it's about diplomacy. It's not to give up their sovereign rights. And there's a huge difference here that people need to understand. It's not about negotiating I would say a loss on Yemen or negotiating a return for Hadi. No, what they're doing is negotiating a way out of the war for the sake of the Yemeni people, but not to the cost of sovereign nationality. This is something that the Houthi have said time and time again, they are not willing to jeopardize or negotiate on. Why should they? Yemen is their land. Why should they allow Black Hawk militants and radical militants to come into Yemen, endanger the life of Yemeni, for what? So that the Saudi could play imperial power in Yemen? No, of course not. So if there is a fault here, it is, again, it is so-called President Hadi, who decided that he wants to align himself with the Saudi and the Wahhabis, and he wants to play war on his people for the sake of a presidency, which is not his anyway.
Right. Well, maybe it's a good time, Lawrence Korb, to talk about what is being negotiated right now. Our guest there raised some very good points regarding the fact that why should this country be heavily influenced by Saudi Arabia in terms of the way it was before. So what is being negotiated here between the two sides?
Well, I think, first of all, let me leave aside the comments that the other guests made, which I think make a lot of sense. But the fact of the matter is, you got to have a ceasefire to begin to talk about these issues. If you don't, this war continues to go on with no clear winner. I mean, we talk about the Houthis. We know that they're getting aid from outside, including from Iran. We haven't even mentioned al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is also there, which is a threat like ISIS is in Syria to everybody. So what we need to do is get a ceasefire, and then we can work out, you know, who is the legitimate government, how do they decide. But until you get a ceasefire and begin to talk about these things, it's going to be impossible to solve all of these complex questions.
You know, one of the things, Catherine Shagdam, that is truly amazing here is it seems like many forget how the Ansarullah movement and the allied government forces were actually winning against al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. And then as this war dragged on, they were being targeted instead of al-Qaeda, which brought about many suspicions of Saudi Arabia actually working in tandem with the AQAP, which in turn, U.S. has said is the biggest threat to their homeland. So if you can, please make some sense out of this for us.
Well, before I do that, I'd just like to very quickly clear just one point. Iran is not helping anybody on the ground. What Iran is doing is pushing for peace and trying to get to give the resistance movement political support. It's not sending any weapon, it's not sending any men on the ground. So I would like to really kind of dispel this idea, you know, this narrative that has been perpetuated by Western media, that the Iranian government is actually having a hand and exerting pressure onto the Houthi, trying, you know, to forward their own policy. This is not the case whatsoever. The Houthi are very much in charge, and if they lean on Iran, it is just politically, because Iran understands the principle of resistance and understands the need to fight imperialism. Now, in terms of Al-Qaeda and the rise of radicalism in Yemen, yes, it is very odd to me to see the likes of the United States of America or even other European powers to support Saudi Arabia and those, and even Hadi, when we know now that there are a lot of elements within his so-called cabinet, and you know, the vice president, for example, General Al-Ahmar, who is actually a former member of the Brotherhood and a member of Al-Islam Party, which is the equivalent, more or less, of Al-Qaeda. It's just a different veneer, a different banner. Now, the Saudi, we know, are supporting radical militants in Yemen because they're using them as some sort of asymmetrical weapon of mass destabilization. They have used Al-Qaeda elements in Yemen for decades because they're trying to erode at Yemen's sovereignty so they could better assert their own policy and assert that power onto Saudi Arabia. We know this to be a fact. This is not a conspiracy theory or just a crazy idea. This is true. This is reality. So when you see the US and other Western powers standing against the Houthi, then you need to ask yourself what it is that you want to see happen in the Middle East and what are you playing at? Because the Houthi are the only faction in Yemen who will do everything that they can to defeat Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda wants to defeat them and destroy them completely and altogether. So who best to actually fight terrorism and radicalism in Yemen, but the one faction that Al-Qaeda wants to see destroyed more than anything else? And the US, you would think, would align themselves with the Houthi to defeat Al-Qaeda when the Houthi have already proven that they can, and they have not only the will, but the military capability and training to do so. No, what they do is support the Saudi in their war, because the Saudi wants to make sure that there's enough Al-Qaeda fighters in Yemen so that they could promote, again, the imperial policies in Saudi Arabia so that they could control the world oil route. Because at the end of the day, it goes back to control over natural resources and geopolitical control over Saudi Arabia. People need to get that. And the thing is, the only reason why we have radicalism and sectarianism in Yemen today, it is because of Riyadh's policy. It is because of the narrative that they have carried, that suddenly we're discovering that the Shia and Sunni in Yemen, well, it was never, ever a problem.
Right. Well, you know, I'd like to ask you this, Lawrence Korb, because this, again, is sounding very similar to Syria. Here we have the Houthis, or the Ansarullah movement, I should say, fighting against the Al-Qaeda terrorists. And you have a similar situation somewhat in Syria, where you have government forces, Russia in the air, and Iran in the advisory role, and of course Hezbollah, who are fighting against these terrorists. So why doesn't the U.S. And its allies want to side with the winning equation, the winning part of the equation against the terrorists, and yet target those very same countries who've been successful against the terrorists?
Well, as you know, the United States has bombed Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and some of their leaders. So it's not that the United States doesn't want to do that. What happened was basically when the Houthis forced out the Hadi government, which, though imperfect, was the government in Yemen, when they forced it out, the Saudis were concerned that this would spill over into Saudi Arabia, so they took action. And that's why it's so important to have these peace talks. My guess is at some point you're going to see Yemen divided into north and south like it was years ago, because it's been very difficult ever since the country came together to allocate the power. So hopefully that would happen in the talks in Kuwait, and the UN envoy has said he wants the parties to come back. And if you can get that, then we can focus on AQAP. But the AQAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, is taking advantage of the fact that there's no ceasefire, the fact that the Houthis seized a military base north of the capital to advance their cause. So I think that's why we got to have a ceasefire and all the parties stand down from what they're doing until we can resolve the situation. But if you're going to have the parties like the Houthis taking action, then it's going to be difficult for the Hadi government to come to the peace talks.
Okay, I know you have a reaction, Catherine Shakhtan, but I'm going to ask you this because we're quickly running out of time. And that is, you know, we keep hearing about Hadi being the president, but everybody seems to forget it was a one-man presidential election. I'll never forget when Hadi went in the voting booth, putting a piece of paper in that box. Mm-hmm. Well, who did he vote for? There was only one person, himself. People
exactly
forget that.
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, the whole thing was a sham. I mean, they called it a democratic election, a democratic... And this is ridiculous. It was a one-man election. He was elected in 2012 for 2 years, which ended in 2014. And he wasn't taken out of power. He resigned. He resigned twice on national television. I mean, nobody forced him. He decided to run away when the going got tough. He decided to run away because he sabotaged the effort that the resistance was actually carrying out in Yemen to try to bring about democracy and popular will. You have to remember, too, that at the time, Hadi resigned, he was actually going against the whole national dialogue. You know, all the points that the people had agreed upon, all the points that the people had negotiated for 18 months, he decided to renege on them, and the Houthi forced him to actually have political accountability. The Houthi did not come, you know, with their weapons and force themselves onto the government. This is a fallacy. What they've done is they arrived into the capital, and I recall, and I was actually there in Yemen, President Hadi calling upon his Ministry of Defense and his Minister of Interior to tell them to not engage the Houthi because the Houthi promised that they would not engage them, that the only reason why they were in the capital, it was to ensure that popular will would be carried out according to the democratic principle which are in the constitution of Yemen. You know, and that's the thing that people tend to forget. So enough with the you know, this twist that the media have put on Yemen to kind of rationalize and legitimize this war that the Saudi have carried out against Yemen, alleging that they were under threat, that the national security was in danger. This is not true. This is a lie. This is propaganda. What they've done is the Saudi realized that their puppet government was actually out of power, and they've done everything that they could to kick the resistance out, because then democracy would be south of their borders, and they could not have that. You have to remember that Saudi Arabia is a theocracy. It's the most violent, radical, reactionary theocracies in the world. You know, they chop off heads left, right, and center all the time. No one says anything. And you're telling me that they want to bring democracy to Yemen? I mean, I hope that seriously the United States is joking when they're supporting those people, this Wahhabi government, which is actually wreaking havoc in the Middle East, promoting radicalism everywhere, right, including Europe, for that matter. And we're supposed to support those people? I don't think so. The resistance movement wants democracy, a real democracy, not a one-man show, you know, run by just, you know, President Hadi. Who is President Hadi? Nobody elected him. The people don't want him. I think they make that very, very clear. So why should he come back? Come back to what? He wasn't elected in the first place.
Well, Lawrence Korb, then let me ask you plain and simple. What does the U.S., who's obviously supporting Saudi Arabia in a variety of ways, want from this war that's being exerted on Yemen? What does the U.S. want out of Yemen right now?
Well, basically, they want it to be stabilized. And that's why I say if it could go back to dividing North and South the way it was years ago, because the U.S. main concern is al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. And as I mentioned, they have attacked them over the years because they were plotting to attack the United States. And you have a similar situation in Syria where you have al-Nusra, which is an al-Qaeda offshoot, also getting involved in that war with the legitimate opposition to Assad. And so I think it's important to keep in mind that what we need to do is stop the fighting so we can all focus on the real enemy and then let the Yemenis people decide on their own future without outside information. And the idea that, you know, Iran hasn't invaded the helped the Houthis is not true. Remember, there was an arms shipment that was stopped by the U.S. that was going to, the Iranians were trying to send into Yemen when the civil war started.
I see you shaking your head. Catherine Sharkham, go ahead.
No, it's just because, you know, this whole narrative is very tiring. Iran is not doing anything. Iran is not helping anybody in Yemen. And if they wanted to help the Houthi, by the way, I think that the Houthi would have made significant advances against, you know, Hadi supporters by now. So this is just beside the point. The other thing that I'd like to quickly go back to is this idea that America wants to divide Yemen. Why? And why has America any say in how Yemen should be governed? I mean, this is, again, we're going back to this exceptionalism that America seems to be carrying around and seems to be able to decide what people should, what countries should do, should not do. Why do they get involved? Who gave America this role as a police, you know, as a peacekeeper or peace broker or whatever in the world? I mean, who actually elected them? Who decided to make them
Let's get an answer from Lawrence Korb, and we'll come back to you. Lawrence Korb, do you have an answer for our guest there?
Well, we don't want to divide Yemen, but that, to me, seems to be one way to stop the fighting. No, what I said was that's what they wouldn't mind happening, because before they were unified, you didn't have these problems. And you may remember going back to the 70s, the United States got involved in Yemen trying to help the people in the north who were being persecuted. So the United States would just like the war to stop. My feeling is that with dividing it up, at least temporarily, would give them some chance to get their lives back together again.
Okay.
How so?
And in closing, go ahead. 30 seconds, Catherine Shogdam.
No, I just want to say, how so? How would that make anyone better? I mean, the only way to make Yemen better would be to actually have Saudi Arabia to back off Yemen, to stop the bombing, to stop the humanitarian blockade, which is completely illegal. It's a war crime and a crime against humanity, because 26 million people are now starving just because the Saudi decided. The U.S. and the rest of the world is standing by Saudi Arabia just because the Saudi have enough billions of dollars to throw at everybody, so they look the other way. So do not talk to me about Iran helping the Houthi, because they're not. Do not tell me that the U.S. is trying to promote democracy or that the U.S. is trying to bring peace to Yemen, because this is not true. The only thing that the U.S. is doing is playing puppet government to the Saudi. What they're trying to do is just to, you know, quite pathetically, I might add, to try to just siphon natural resources from yet another country in the Middle East by trying to invent the sectarian divide that now exists everywhere in the Middle East. And I'm sorry, no, this is not going to happen. The Houthi, the resistance movement, will continue to fight, and they will kick the Saudi Arabia out of Yemen, and the Houthi will win. And why should they ever go back to the negotiating table when what they want is completely opposite to what the Hadi government wants? Why should they?
Very well. We're going to have to end that. Thank you for that. Programs Director of the Shafaqna Institute of Middle East Studies, Catherine Shogdam, was speaking there from London, and U.S. Foreign Policy and National Security Analyst Lawrence Korb spoke to us from Washington. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitawe and the entire team in the Capitol Tehran, it's goodbye.